Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Stephen Davis, co-founder and CTO at Signifier.
First of all, you know, I just want to say, obviously, congratulations on all the success that you guys have been having. You know, Signifier seems like things are really starting to take off, or at least so from what I hear. So congratulations on the success so far. I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg for you.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. It's been a we've been doing this kind of thing for a long time, and we've had a lot of success in the past. And I think we're really starting to take it to the next level now, which is great. And there's a lot of good to come in the future of Signifier as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the whole journey. And I always find that I myself would love to build a startup, but I'm also quite realistic, I think. And like having to actually have an idea is probably where I kind of stumble sometimes. You know, when you're looking at kind of a blank canvas, is it really like you pragmatically decide what you're going to build? Or is it something that just kind of tends to happen based on, you know, kind of what other things that you were working on? And, you know, what was the case for you?
Well, that's a great question. It's actually kind of a combination of both, I think. There's sort of a natural evolution that's happened based on my experiences and the experiences of our co-founders that led us down this path. But I think there's also a lot of opportunities along the way to really stop and take stock of that experience and the needs that we see in the marketplace, and take a proactive approach to figuring out how we're going to solve people's real problems. And so it really is a combination. Ideas alone won't get you there, and experience alone won't get you there. It's really sort of this combination that happens.
Did you use a lot of the lean and the agile approach to things when you were kind of starting out?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've always been, I think, a little ahead of the curve on lean, agile practices. And I think it really goes back to our history as a company and our history as individuals. Myself and some of our co-founders went to school for systems and information engineering and computer science. And the common thread there is solving problems in unique and creative ways. And it's agnostic to the industry or the particular problem. And I think that's what excites us and gets us motivated to start thinking, rather than just taking the traditional approach to solving problems and solving them in the same ways that everybody solves problems. We try to take a step back and, look at the larger picture and then iterate. And that iteration is something that's always been a systemic part of systems and information engineering. It's been a systemic part of real computer science, and it's really deep in the culture of our company to think about problems that way.
And it's interesting that you guys are kind of approaching things and constantly challenging your approach to things, because that's what's going to allow you to maintain and stay ahead and work things out quicker and more effective and efficiently. Because what I actually find is with these kind of popularized methodologies, people kind of, they become Bible to them, sort of, for lack of a better term. Yeah. And I think sometimes that can hold you back. And especially the rate of change of technology at the moment, things move so quickly that if you're not moving or thinking as quickly, then it's very easy to get left behind. So I like not buying into these coined terms as much and just kind of thinking about things, you know, practically. And a lot of technical people as well, I find that I speak with, that they really struggle to kind of fundamentally understand the business needs sometimes instead of the technical problems.
Yeah, and a lot of those things are great rules of thumb. They're good models to go by, but it's important to know when to stay in the margins and when to start to veer outside the lines and make your own path. There's a lot of marketing terms like that we struggle with as a company, things like big data, which is really a thing that's been around for a really long time. And it's still a term that people focus on without really thinking about what that means to your problem, to your specific problem and how what that means. So I think we one of the things that we pride ourselves on is looking beyond the marketing of ourselves and our competitors and really digging deep into what does big data and these kind of buzzwords really mean when the rubber meets the road for companies.
And we all tend to kind of do these sort of things, but it really comes down to kind of practicality. What is this helping our business needs? And I'm sure that you were kind of aware of those kind of overlying business needs before you started building, this company.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is something that we've talked about consistently since, the last 20 years or so, from our history working in the military for the U.S. government, in the intelligence agencies. And we built technologies in Afghanistan for Special Operations Command. We've had a lot of experience with the need to rapidly innovate and understand what the real problems are that are in some cases life and death situations. And then the company was a natural evolution of that. So moving from that world to a private company to focus on those kinds of problems. And then eventually we broke out that company into a commercial facing company to take the lessons that we learned in intelligence and defense and apply them to commercial problems that are much larger in scope and scale and industry.
When you look at onboarding, for example, do you find it kind of difficult to have people who kind of think in the same way, technical people specifically?
Oh yeah, I love that question. We actually get that question a lot because a lot of our founders are, have that kind of pedigree of working in the defense and intelligence communities. But a lot of the people that we hire are complementary skill sets. And the old adage about hiring people smarter than you. Yeah, we absolutely do that. That's important. The only people that we hire are people smarter than us, but it's more subtle than that. We hire people that come from significantly different backgrounds from ourselves, non-traditional development backgrounds. A lot of our employees that do day-to-day software programming, some of those guys are ex-neuroscientists. Some of them come from journalism. We have PhDs in psychology. We have a PhD in literature, and these folks that have this totally different perspective on work and on solving problems and approaching things is such a value add when they apply that thinking to software development, when they apply that thinking to project management and actually figuring out solutions for our customers.
Kind of going back to the point I was making earlier about, having that external perspective on things. Well, what better to have that external perspective on things than people internally who think completely differently? That hopefully should generate the best product. I certainly think that is going to get you to the better place. And I suppose that's my theory, and I probably couldn't quite quantify that out.
Right. Yeah, it's difficult because it's not a common hiring strategy. We even take that problem all the way back to the very beginning of our hiring process. And for example, in our interviews, we don't ask stump the chump programming questions. We don't talk about riddles. We like to sit down with our candidates at a whiteboard and work out problems that are representative of actual problems that we will solve as a company. And so it's really not about, do you know how to make a bubble sort algorithm. We either assume from your resume, if you have a computer science background, that you know that, or if you have a PhD in psychology background, maybe you don't know that, but you might still be a serious contributor to the team. If in an interview, you can work with us at a whiteboard and solve a problem and work collaboratively and really get your head around thinking. I think the main driver for the types of candidates that we hire really goes back to the thing that we talked about a little earlier about that systems engineering approach, kind of the scientific methodology of problem solving.
You know, do you think that there is over-reliance on, you know, data and analytics and, you know, probable outcomes in a lot of instances? And when it comes to making kind of, you know, whether it's hiring decisions or key business decisions, would you think that there is such thing as an over-reliance on data?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I think a lot of companies are probably still struggling to figure out how to rely on that data. And I think probably using it in inappropriate, misleading ways. So in that respect, definitely. I think there are more strategic goals that you can't derive just from looking at data alone. And this is another thing that we try to educate our clients on is the idea of kind of over-reliance on traditional analytics. So for example, going back to big data, to a lot of people, big data means counting the number of likes that they're getting on Facebook. And counting the number of likes tells you how many likes that you're getting on a piece of content, but it doesn't really give you any real insight. So that's certainly a case where over-reliance on an inadequate analysis is definitely a problem. And it's something that we coach our clients on a daily basis, that you've got to get beyond these simple traditional analytics. Counts of likes aren't going to get you anywhere. You've got to look at what people are really saying about your company and about the problems that you're having.
It's interesting, the approach to analytics. And I was reading something not too long ago about, I think it was C-level people, so, you know, CEOs, CTOs and such. There was obviously a massive investment, and I think it was specifically talking about business intelligence, actually, but I think it was kind of applied to a lot of kind of data. And they were kind of saying that although the investment kind of nationally has really exploded over the last 12 to 18 months on, you know, building BI teams, the executives, there was still a disproportionate amount of them that were saying, well, we're not 100% sure on kind of the ROI yet, but it still is quite obviously something that people aren't 100% sure about at the moment.
Right, and you're absolutely right. That is one of the biggest problems, I think, in the big data content analytics space that we have today is that lack of understanding of ROI. And part of it is because some of the bigger players in the industry, some of the really big name companies that I won't mention, are focused on ends of the spectrum. They're focused either on very generic algorithms and ways of analyzing data that are too generic to solve any individual problems, but just generic enough that you could try to apply it to things, or the other end of the spectrum where they're creating niche technologies that are only applicable for very specific problems, and it's hard to get the message out about how modifying those algorithms and that technology could apply to larger problems. And that's a gap that we've identified, that our company is really focused on fixing that, on filling that gap, where the understanding and the promise of and vision of big data meets reality for not just niche problems, but a more broad spectrum across industries. And that's a challenge. And I think until some more lessons are learned, I think it's still going to be a long road for some companies that have bought in to some of these larger generic products that don't really solve problems?
Well, I think there's certainly, there's not the education there, isn't it? I don't think it's kind of a tool that you can kind of, or a widget that you can kind of just apply to your organization and it's a churn out and tell you exactly what to do. It goes far beyond that, doesn't it? So, you know, that's obviously a very simplistic way of putting it and not a literal term, of course, but I think that's very much what I think too many people are expecting.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's also, I think what we're going to see in the near term is the creation of a new profession in that realm that's not necessarily a data scientist, that's not necessarily a data analyst, but somebody that's kind of a mix of those things that really understands what these technologies are really doing to fuse large data sets and understanding the interactions between those data sets and really getting to the core of the value and the ROI for the business needs, the business bottom line. And I think that's traditionally, that's not necessarily a job title or a skill set that I think has existed explicitly. I think a lot of people have put that responsibility on the shoulders of data scientists and analysts, but not in the right way, and maybe not framed in the right way.
You know, how much creativity is involved on a day-to-day basis with kind of the discussions that you guys will have? I know you obviously have those creative discussions when it comes to kind of solving problems, but is it still quite exciting because it's not, you know, a systematized thing, you know, as of yet, and it still allows for a massive amount of problem solving and an element of kind of creative thought to go into different projects?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have product designers on our team that do UI and UX and graphic design. But creativity, and I'm glad you framed it that way, because creativity really isn't limited to designers and artists. Creativity is prevalent throughout all of software development. I think that gets lost on a lot of people. We every day we sit down at whiteboards and come up with new ideas to improve our existing products and to come up with new ideas for new products based on real customer needs. We even work with the whole spectrum of very popular technologies like Angular JS, which is backed by Google. It's a popular web development framework. There's a big community around it, and there's a lot of documentation. But our backend is totally different. Our backend is a very niche programming language called Clojure that has a lot of pros and cons that we have decided are a perfect fit for these new kinds of data analysis and content analytics technologies. And it's really fun to work with. It's a fun, pleasing technology to sit down and write some Clojure code and learn Clojure code with the rest of the team and figure out new ways to apply it. Because there aren't a lot of examples for some of these more niche technologies. There isn't a huge community of developers on Stack Overflow like there is with some of the bigger technologies. So I think it's at a lot of different levels. It's brainstorming big ideas for products and strategy for the company, but it goes all the way down to every line of code that we write. There's significant creativity involved.
So, you know, I want to obviously talk a little bit about you as well before we kind of shut it down here. But, you know, obviously someone who's been massively compelled by kind of data and seemingly compelled by technology throughout your life, you know, was it always about kind of the technology? Would you call yourself a techie? Or was it really, you know, about the outcomes that kind of allowed you to feel, you know, passionate about the projects that you've, you know, kind of inevitably worked on?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think I have always considered myself a techie. The combination of computer science and systems engineering, I think I've always considered a technologist at my core, though that often branches out to things like management consulting and process engineering, which I think are also fascinating things that have unique applications in terms of technology as well. So everything is kind of rooted in this idea of technology. I had a friend ask me really early on in my career, he said, hey Steve, what's the next big thing? And I had no idea what he was talking about. I thought maybe he was asking me what I was up to on the weekend. And in retrospect, I think he was just making small talk, but it's something that stuck with me, and I've kind of made it a mission to think constantly about what's the next big thing for me or my company every year. And so this idea of one big thing every year, if I look back on the year and there wasn't something, a big significant change that took me out of my comfort zone or that radically changed something about the way that we do business in the company, then that's an opportunity to look at that strategy and figure out what's the next big thing. And I think that's something that I do personally, whether that's looking at personal goals of running a race or anything like that, but it also applies to the company and our corporate strategy of making sure that we're always on track for innovating and pushing the boundaries of technology and our strategy.
Interesting. Yeah. And I like that kind of from a personal perspective as well. I think it's always interesting to constantly push yourself and stay interested. You were probably a kid, probably as a youngster, I can imagine, someone who got bored very easily.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think I tell people this a lot too, that the thing that I look for in a job or a career is a sense of progress. And that's the number one thing for me. That's not true for everyone, but you know, I think a lot of people are perfectly content with having a steady career and not really making waves, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for myself, and I think for a lot of people, probably a lot of your listeners are interested in a real sense of progress. And I think it's important to check in with yourself and with your peers on a regular basis to ask that question: Do we feel like we're making progress? And that's important because that'll really drive your next steps. It's an easy way to realize: Do I need to look at another position? Do I need to up the ante at my company? Do I need to take on more responsibility or that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I think I'm kind of quite like-minded, I suppose, to you in that sense. It's about the achievement. I think when you go somewhere, you want to achieve something and see progress. I think you've certainly put yourself in a position where you're allowing yourself to fulfill a lot of that progress. Certainly when it's your own, it probably makes things a lot easier. You don't have anyone telling you no.
Yeah, that's true. I think, but you know, it is a collaborative effort here at the company, and I think everybody kind of shares that for a sense of progress. And I think that's another core value of the company is making sure that we're always making progress and learning and pushing the boundaries of our technologies and solutions. And that's exciting. That's what keeps everybody coming to work day to day is that sense of progress.
I like that. And on that note, Stephen, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for taking the time, mate. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks for talking, Danny.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.